And now, Icon Art Radio.
So this is Bill Teepel, back in the Icon Art Radio studios with Alan Cobb, who's one of the hosts, along with Donna Colby of Icon Art Radio. But Alan also is a sound sculptor, a sound artist, and he's recently created the Sound Art Institute, right, with under Icon, which is Iowa Contemporary Art. And we had a very interesting talk last week about the potential for the Sound Art Institute and the areas of sound that it is studying, which is other than music. And so in today's show, we're going to address some of these aspects of sound that will be the area of study for Icon's Sound Art Institute. So take it away, Alan.
It's been interesting thinking about all of these areas. As I mentioned last week, I came up with a couple of dozen of them, and I won't try and go into all of them this week. But I was surprised at how many different creative channels there are that are based on sound. And I was also surprised that so many of them also represent actual career paths. There, it's not just for people who are, you know, kind of crazed fine artists like I am, who are willing to, you know, do stuff that hardly anyone will ever hear, and certainly almost no one will spend any money on. But there's a lot of different areas, and we decided last week that we'd try and present a bit of a thumbnail of each one of them. We already talked a little bit about sound design in general, sound design for synthesizer manufacturers, and sound design for use in audio special effects and that kind of thing. Synthesizers themselves are an area that the Sound Art Institute is going to be very interested in, and we will be exploring perhaps the unexplored aspects of sound synthesizers. Most synthesizers are made for the purpose of creating conventional music or relatively recognizable music. But they're also laboratories in their own right for exploring what sound is and what kinds of sounds there can be. Some of them are so flexible that you really get the feeling that you're looking at all possible kinds of sound. And what intrigues me is the fact that even the most flexible ones, and I'll mention one by name, Reactor from Native Instruments, which is a synthesizer. It's a laboratory in the computer for building your own synthesizer from scratch, and you can make a synthesizer do anything you can conceive of that can be done with digital signal processing. And you do it by dragging cartoon wires around between little cartoon sound modules, and it's fascinating, incredibly powerful, and of course infinitely more flexible than any synthesizer can be, because this is what you use to make synthesizers. So it gives you the idea that you're now looking at the full spectrum of all possible vibrations of, you know, pressure waves in the air. But you're not. Not even close. The synthesizer with all of its astonishing flexibility and capability, it can't even begin to make the sound of standing on a street corner in New York for 5 minutes and listening. So from the point of view, and that's just one, and we haven't got time for me to make that point over and over again, more and more colorfully, but the idea is just that, you know, the synthesizers give us a false sense of how much control we have over the sound field. And although we do have a lot of control over it, and nowadays, you know, much more than we ever did before, nevertheless, the Sound Art Institute will be looking at synthesizers to figure out just exactly what are they not able to do? And what are the limitations of synthesis, and how can we get past those limitations? We talked also last week a little bit about Foley, the guys who make the incidental sounds that accompany the regular activity on the screen. That's a career, and it's also very revealing of what happens psychologically when we experience a movie and how important the sound is, even though it's not in the foreground, unless it's a car crash, of course, or dialogue, which, of course, is also in the foreground. So Foley represents, for the Sound Art Institute, a particularly interesting area of the experience of sound, because that ultimately is what the artist is concerned with. Then we talked also briefly about phonography and sound walks. Phonography, of course, is using sound to get an audio snapshot of a location instead of using light to get a visual snapshot. But there are other areas. There's audio history, where people go out and record the people of an area. They may be in an anthropological context or a sociological context. But inevitably, when you're doing that, you're making artistic decisions every step of the way. You're deciding who to record, who not to record, and how to record them, and what to edit out and what to keep. And all of those creative choices make it a very artistic exercise. Probably the most straightforward example of it is simply what they call ENG, or electronic news gathering, which is the new term for walking around with a microphone and interviewing the man on the street. And there's some wonderful new equipment now too. There's a microphone with a built-in digital recorder in it, and so you have like no wires, no radio antennas, no nothing. You just hold out the microphone and it records into itself, and then you get back to your hotel room and dump it into the computer. But let's talk for a minute about radio, because here we are in a radio program, and radio is entirely sound. It's confined to audio. And
I've always loved that, because there's so much more available to the imagination of the viewer than you could ever do with...
Right. It's like reading instead of going to see the movie. And how many times have you gone to the movie and seen this incredible, colorful, presentation of something that you read, and it just didn't come close to the reality that you had built in your head? We need to take a good look.
There's a huge potential for radio once again, I believe.
Yes. Well, and of course, we have the marvelously creative Hedquist Productions here in town, and I'm really looking forward to talking to them some more about how the Sound Art Institute can interact with their expertise. And in the same vein, there's a nonprofit organization called ZBS. I'm not sure if it stands for anything, but it sounds great. And ZBS produces radio dramas in stereo with real actors, and they record them on location in real places. They often record the location binaurally, so you get this incredible three-dimensional sound if you listen on headphones. And they produce elaborate mysteries and fantasies and science fiction stories and things. Very, very high production values. It's just a company that keeps cranking out more and more astonishing, super high quality radio shows. And you hear a few of them on National Public Radio. I'm hoping we'll maybe be able to hear some of them here on Real Public Radio. Stan Freeberg, who was, of course, a pioneer in playing with sound on the radio, mostly in a comedic direction, but his whole point when he was, running an ad agency and trying to get business for his ad agency, he would do these radio spots where that you'd hear an announcer describing how the helicopter is flying overhead with the Statue of Liberty hanging beneath it, and they're bringing it over to the Superdome, which was just rolled into town on 450,000 roller skates just last night, and they're still removing the roller skates from underneath it. And they're lowering the Statue of Liberty down through this hole in the top of the Superdome, which has been set up just outside of Fairfield. And the, well, there's a world of, you know, of impossibility that, okay, you could do it with computer graphics in a movie, but we just did it for free, you know, in 30 seconds on the radio. And that was Freeberg's point, was you can do so much more on the radio than you can actually do in a movie. And I don't want to put down the movies as a medium. Heaven knows it's far more capable in other directions. But sound is a much more direct connection to your imagination. It's a very powerful medium. And radio is being revived now.
This is so great.
Yeah,
the public's been underserved by the radio in recent years.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that, you know, as the radio itself begins to wake up again, it's getting streamed over the internet, but it's still somehow, it's still radio. You know, a podcast is still radio. And of course, the vast majority of podcasts never make it onto an actual radio station. They're created by whoever feels like creating them, and they're distributed by whoever feels like distributing them over RSS feeds all over the planet. And so everyone is becoming much, much more sensitized to the possibilities of purely sonic creativity. And that's an area that, you know, really has no boundaries at all. Anything you can think of broadcasting on the radio or putting into an MP3 file is, in a sense, sound art in a sort of radio context, but it's so big I'm not even sure what to call it.
It's very exciting. So what else is on your list?
There's experimental music, of course. There are plenty of people using sound in various musical contexts. And some of them are approaching sound as a substance rather than as a vehicle for music, and yet what they're doing is still very much a musical activity. We don't think of sound, again, very much as substance. We think of it as sort of a coincidence or something that we just take for granted. But sound has a substance to it, and it's a continuum, and it doesn't actually start and stop the way we act like it does. We see something happening, and if it makes a sound, we think that that was a sound, but everything that came before that and everything that came after that wasn't a sound, and yet there's no end to the sound. So that exploration is another area of sound as art that's a bit different from what I've been doing, and experimental music, of course, is another. Computer-generated music really means that the artist has put his attention on defining computer rules and computer processes that result in sound. Not necessarily the way you would do it if you were making a drum track, a rhythm track for a song, but more in trying to explore how the judicious combination of randomness and, you know, programmability or pure orderliness of the computer can generate things that you wouldn't think of as a human. And of course, we mentioned last week Muzak, which is a sort of psychosocial application of music, or what musicians might prefer to think of as pseudo music. For crowd control purposes and things like that. But there's another area is musique concrète, which is really comes from the very first years of recording equipment, back in the early 50s, maybe as early as the 40s, tape recorders were available in laboratories, and people were beginning to record without having to carry around, an Edison cylinder or that kind of a cutting lathe. And people were recording on magnetic media and discovering, the fascination of having the ability to reproduce natural environments and things. So musique concrète is really a French invention originally. I'm afraid I can't remember the name of the pioneer in that field who's extremely well known. but what they did is, and what they still do, is record real things and then process them in various ways to produce unreal things, so that in a sense the sounds from nature become the strings, and the equipment that processes the sound becomes the body of the instrument, and the result is a kind of music that it emerges from natural sound but has gone through the mind of the artist en route. And another area that I'm particularly interested in, and I really hope we can pursue in the Institute, is new kinds of sonic instruments, new kinds of musical instruments. There have been some wonderful innovators over the years. Harry Parch, I believe, was one of the most famous, who made these fantastic glass instruments, and there've been people who've followed his directions, and you can get these things with discs of different diameters of glass on rotating bars, and you rub them with rosin coated fingers the way you would the top of a wine glass, but these are turning slowly at all times, so you can play it almost like a piano with your fingertips. And it's beautiful to look at, and it makes these incredible kind of celestial humming sounds that are hard to believe. I would love it if we could get something going in town to actually do some invention and discovery and new instruments.
That was a fascinating area for me to discover, because I think there's a group in San Francisco that's involved with this, and they had an exhibit like at Ghirardelli Square that I saw of all these unusual instruments.
Yeah.
It was fascinating. I'd love that to be a part of the Sound Institute.
Yeah, especially the acoustic ones, because there are so many acoustic phenomena that we're also just kind of not paying attention to, and they're fascinating to experience in real life. And then, of course, there's all sorts of new possibilities with technology to make the human interface to the sound system, innovative and original. Controlling sound by gesture and controlling sound by moving your entire body. Controlling sound by interacting with light or by interacting with radio. Of course, the earliest of those was the theremin, which you play using one hand to control, moving one hand by one antenna to control the loudness, and moving the other hand by a second antenna to control the pitch.
And let me say this for the audience: this is like not touching the instrument at all.
That's right. You can't
touch the
instrument.
A foot or so away from the instrument and moving your hands in the air and creating sounds.
Yeah, I have a theremin made by Bob Moog, or I made it, but designed and sold by Bob Moog's company. And Moog, of course, the inventor of the Moog synthesizer, and a guiding light for musicians, both experimental and non-experimental, for decades. But the theremin is an amazing thing. I mean, everyone should have a chance to experience it. You just walking up to the instrument produces sound. And in order to perform it with any kind of control, you have to be very careful not to move your body and only to move your hands with respect to the antennas. because, and if someone walks by within 6 feet of the instrument while you're playing, the whole thing goes out of tune. So it's a real challenge to play a real theremin that's made, you know, anything like the way Leon Theremin originally designed it. You know, we don't hear theremins very much. It's incredibly difficult to play, but it's fun to discover and fun to explore. And we definitely should have a theremin on display at ICON sometime for people to discover, which leads to another whole area of activity of the Institute, which would be to provide a kind of a sound discovery, you know, sandbox or playroom for people to just come in and find out more about what kinds of amazing things can happen with sound and sound generating.
We really need a sound exploratorium.
Yes, a sound exploratorium would be really, really fun to build.
Anyone out there with a warehouse to donate?
And there's a career too. I mean, if we built a well-conceived and nicely executed sound exploratorium in this context of just showing people the vast potential of sound and the career paths available, and I unfortunately failed to mention a whole bunch of careers while I was talking about all this.
We'll have a third show sometime.
Yeah, I think we've covered it by now.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of thing that museums and urban galleries on a larger scale would rent. They'd be happy to have a traveling sound exploratorium.
Well, maybe
show.
We'll get a semi as our exploratorium.
Yeah, put it all in the back of a semi.
Shannon Kennedy's always wanted us to have a moving gallery in a semi that goes around the state.
Yeah, a movable feast. That would be great.
So we are running down in time again. Are there jobs that we could, I mean, you're just talking about it right now, but are there other jobs in all these different areas that could actually be performed from Fairfield? Can we?
Well, I think many of them can be. The in radio alone, here we've just started this radio station that you're hearing us from, and I'll just go ahead and say it. It's KRUULP 100.1 FM in Fairfield on your FM dial, not available on any other dial. Although actually it is available on the internet, and before too long we'll be able to access archived shows too and play them as podcasts, which will be great. But yes, I mean, we have this incredible workshop at the radio station for learning how radio works from a technical standpoint and from the beginning of a production standpoint. But then we have Hedquist Productions in town, and we have Hawthorne doing elaborate sound requirements for some of their infomercial productions and industrial productions and stuff. So there's probably a career path right here in Fairfield, and it would lead rapidly into the world at large. But in many cases, delivering a sound product over the internet is trivial. It's easy. Just email someone a WAV file or FTP a WAV file if it's really big. When we did the soundtrack for The Retreat a couple of summers ago, I did all the post-production on that, and I would simply ship off all of the individual stems or sound sections, sound layers, to Zach, the director, who was in L.A., and we did the whole thing remotely from here, and it worked out very nicely. We did the final mixed, in person in my studio, but I did, weeks and weeks of work without having to be directly connected to anybody. Because of the potential of sound as a radio medium, there's just no limit to what you can do. You can create your own career as an interviewer. You can create your own career as an announcer. You can create your own career as a character, a voice character.
And I'd love to see us produce some program. I mean, some storytelling. And
it would,
it'd be
wonderful.
Radio plays.
Yeah, radio dramas are really really exciting. And you can get away with murder. You know, you can make, if you listen to the old radio programs that are still available on the internet or on satellite radio, you can hear, you know, how they did it. And all it takes is a tiny little bit of bridge music and a clinking of a glass or a slamming of a car door, and you've got an entire set all built in your head. And it's very exciting. The creative possibilities are fantastic, and we are seeing the emergence of new markets for all this kind of material. People are actually spending money on it.
So apart from the Art Institute's more purist approach to studying sound, there's potential for an independent contractor forming a business here that could channel a lot of this creative activity out all over the world.
Sure. I'd love to see the Sound Art Institute turn into a training ground for people to actually come from the larger Midwestern community or the whole country and come to Fairfield and get kind of supercharged on the possibilities of sound, pick a career, and then explore it and take off.
Well, I think there's probably public funds to help you establish this too. We're going to explore
That would be great.
Especially if it'll produce jobs for Iowans. Well, thanks again, Alan. This has been great. We'll continue with our sound art interviews and sound art productions with Alan in coming programs.
Thanks very much. Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.